This is KRCU's Going Public. I'm Clayton Hester. Cape Girardeau's been talking lately about its Confederate monument in Ivor Square. The monument was discussed at the June City Council meeting, and a petition has been shared on social media about the statue's removal. The City Council will be discussing the issue at their July 6th meeting, with new input from the Historic Preservation Commission, which recommends the removal of the statue. Denise Lincoln has researched the history of the statue. She was responsible for organizing the effort that led to the installation of the United States Colored Troop Memorial last year. She said the statue's actually been moved from its initial location, which was at the east end of Morgan Oak Street, at the foot of the Mississippi River Bridge that was in service in Cape Girardeau until the 90s. When the bridge was slated for demolition, an effort was made to move the statue to prevent it from being forgotten or vandalized. Can you talk a little bit about the installation of the Confederate statue in Ivor Square? Do you know about the history of it? And was it always located there?
Well, I did dive deep into the history of it as we attempted to put a context for the Civil War memorials at Ivor Square back in 2017. We started that project. And so I was aware of the of the Confederate States of America's monument there, but I didn't know much about it. I've dived deep to understand why it's where it is and what its history has been. It has not always been at the courthouse lawn or what we know as Ivor Square. It was originally placed by its sponsoring organization, the United Daughters of the Confederacy, and what they called the Morgan Oak Plaza. It would be what I would call the median grassy area on Morgan Oak, the extreme eastern end of Morgan Oak Street, and at that time was at the foot of the old the Mississippi River Bridge that served Cape Girardeau until the late 1990s.
Okay, and with that, do you know any of the reasons about why it was moved? Is there a specific purpose?
Yeah, it was moved because the bridge was slated for demolition, and as I understand it, some concerned Civil War history aficionados through the Civil War Roundtable was afraid that without the bridge causing traffic to frequent that area, and at that time the old seminary was abandoned. They were afraid that the monument would just be forgotten and possibly vandalized, and so they took it upon themselves, as I understand. I wasn't part of that history or that decision making, but moved it to the courthouse lawn.
Okay, with that, was there an intention, I guess, so far as what the statue was kind of, I guess, put up originally even for, or, you know, moved for, is in terms of, is it a symbol of history? Is it a memorial in those terms? And I guess basically what they were going for in terms of what it was representing.
Well, you would need to turn back time pretty far in Cape Girardeau to understand the full context of the history. Interestingly enough, in the eastern part of Missouri, St. Louis and Cape Girardeau in particular, back in 1890s, there was interest by women, mostly daughters of Confederate soldiers or certainly advocates of the Southern cause, Confederate-leaning individuals who were still thinking about the Civil War and about their fathers and brothers and uncles and what their reputation was 25 years after the Civil War. So there was a group that was organized in Cape Girardeau called the Daughters of the Confederacy. It was organized in 1891 in Cape Girardeau, right downtown at what was then the Riverview Hotel. Several women were advocating this organization, but primary in the leadership was Mrs. Lewis Houck, or Mary Gibney Houck. She was the first elected president of that organization. Turns out that two organizations of similar ilk were had already been established in St. Louis, and they probably influenced Mary's advocacy for this to happen in Cape Girardeau. And so those three organizations became the Missouri Daughters of Confederacy. Interesting that Missouri was not technically a Confederate state, but the Daughters of the Confederacy and later then the United Daughters of the Confederacy started right in Missouri. Other states followed their lead and created similar organizations in their own states, primarily Tennessee. The United Daughters of the Confederacy started in Nashville a few years later. The Cape Girardeau chapter was actually chapter number 3 in the original organization. So that's how early they were as giving a number designation. The Cape Girardeau group eventually joined the United Daughters of the Confederacy, and then they were renumbered as number 629. But as early as 1891, there were women who were wanting to be sure that their Confederate relatives and the Confederate cause was not forgotten in Cape Girardeau.
All right. And I know that with regards to that, it is, I guess I shall say, interesting in terms of Cape Girardeau's own history with the Civil War, just considering, having a battle here between the Union and the Confederacy. Is that does that seem odd to you as a researcher, do you think, to, having that sort of monument like that?
Well, yes and no. I've heard and read in comments in very recent days that, it's a quandary because the impression was that Cape Girardeau was a Union stronghold. And in fact, we were a military-occupied city. We were strategically on the Mississippi River. There was a considerable sentiment toward the Confederacy here. And so very early in the war, in July of 1861, Union military forces were ordered to come to Cape Girardeau and take up residency, impose martial law, build their own forts, and somewhat suppress the local sentiment of the Confederacy leaning. And so, yes, perhaps the impression is that there were a lot of Union folks around here, and there were, but they were all from out of other states and units that rotated in and out of here throughout the whole Civil War. So when they left, there was a sigh of relief, and the Confederate-leaning folks still were somewhat disenfranchised, but they had a real bitter opinion of what had happened to them through the war.
Could you speak a little bit about, just in terms of giving us some of that background in terms of you having done that, and also then what it was like, putting up the statue next to this Confederate statue?
Yeah. Well, clarification, the men of color, men of African descent, as they were referred to during that era, or colored troops, were not technically freed slaves at that point. Most of the men who came to Cape Girardeau to enlist had defied their enslavement and, at great risk to themselves and their families, came to the Union encampment at Cape Girardeau seeking protection. And so halfway through the war, when it was allowed for men of color to enlist, they enlisted. But technically, they were still someone's property. And so it was of great risk that they took. They were not yet freed, but they were willing to fight for that freedom, not waiting for someone else to fight it for them. So I became aware of this history through some kind of serendipitous encounters I had in researching at the National Archives in Washington, D.C. I came across enlistment records for these troops. I was puzzled by them, came back to Cape Girardeau to try to inform myself better and realized there was no written history about the African-American involvement, particularly their enlistment here in Cape Girardeau. And I just felt a responsibility and a moral obligation to rectify that story. So as I told the story, it caught the attention of many. We were able to use the individual soldier stories that I was able to collect to pull out, particularly the story of the Ivers family, James and Harriet. And so that became the foundation for renaming Ivers Square, and then the interpretation of that also fell to the obligation to put some kind of visual teaching tool, if you will, and a statue seemed to be appropriate. We launched that project in 2017 and talked it around to many groups to kind of get a gauge of the will of the community to go forward with this kind of thing. And at that time, the subject of the Confederate States of America monument came up, and there was outcry about the appropriateness of putting a memorial to United States colored troop soldiers within eyesight, if you will, of the Confederate monument. And it was expressed that it was a displeasure, an uncomfortable juxtaposition of stories, and there was some outcry at that point that if the United States Colored Troop Monument went up, the Confederate soldier, the memorial to Confederate soldiers needed to come down. My committee wrestled with this long and hard. We tried to listen. We tried to take in what was being said. We came to the conclusion that we were about wanting to build on the history, not tear history down. And we felt that there was strength in the three Civil War monuments that exist in a triangle on that yard. And we were committed not only to add to the story and tell the story of the African-American contribution, but we also wanted to put in context, clear context, the history and the progression and the intent behind all three monuments.
Question regarding a little bit more of the context, and as far as a little bit of research into this, does the organization of the Daughters of the Confederacy still exist in Cape Girardeau? Do you know?
You know, that's a pondering question, and I've had the same one. I have not searched it through to its end. I know it started in 1891. I know that at Special Collections at Kent Library, Southeast Missouri State University, there is a yearbook that was put together by librarian Sadie Kent, of which Kent Library is named. She was a member of the organization. She won an award in 1949 for a scrapbook that she had compiled telling the local chapter's history. So I know it was there in 1949. I have asked people who would likely know, and no one really understands or has a clear recollection of when the organization ended. I have learned that many of the women in the 1940s and probably 50s who belonged to the United Daughters of the Confederacy in those years also were members of the Daughters of the American Revolution. They're similar but not kind of society kind of organizations. You have to prove your lineage to soldiers, to be members of each organization. And so women who had the time and interest to know their genealogy and wanted to belong to these societal elite kind of organizations, many times in Cape Girardeau had membership in both of those organizations. So I don't know when it died away. I know that as I have looked at yearbook reports, for the organization and have read their own history in their own words. As with many organizations, as the membership aged, having new younger members was always part of their, you know, constant worry. Will there be someone to carry on this tradition? And maybe it just aged out, died out. I don't know. When you look at why the United Daughters of the Confederacy wanted to exist, they had really three stackpoles of purpose to their organization. And this comes out both with the national organization, but it's also expressed in the words of Cape Girardeau leaders in their own written histories. They wanted to put up memorials. They wanted to, quote-unquote, monitor truth history for truthfulness, and they wanted to educate future generations. And so, you know, we have evidence of all three of those activist kind of activities in Cape Girardeau. Of course, the monument is the most visible of those things. But the truthfulness of history were based around the tenets of the Lost Cause narrative. They say that the Confederate fight was heroic. They were also advocating that enslaved people were happy with their enslavement and that slavery was not the root cause of the war. So we do find in Cape Girardeau history a great effort in the monthly meetings of the United Daughters of the Confederacy to present to each other programs that advocated those values, advocated what they considered the truthfulness of the Civil War, being fought for states' rights and the rights of people to choose their own culture. And then they also went to great lengths to have children's programs to get at that educating the future generations. They, in fact, I came across recently a photo of school children at Jefferson School in 1963, where they put together a calendar for the wall. And there's a sweet little girl pointing to a Confederate flag put on the February calendar for the 18th of February to designate Jefferson Davis's birthday. So, you know, where does that come from? Well, I think it's evidence of the lingering effort to be sure that children knew Confederate history, but not necessarily Black history. And, of course, February is Black History Month, and there wasn't a month in 1963, but there was a week since 1926 to teach African-American history. But there's nothing on their calendar that indicates that that was part of the curriculum. So those lingering stackpoles of advocacy and linger and have evidence in Cape Girardeau at several different very subtle layers of our history and our mindset. So the local organization of United Daughters in their monuments project had several attempts before they were finally successful to put up the monument that we have today. Their first attempt was to put a monument to the Confederacy in three places in Cape Girardeau. One was at Old Lorimer Cemetery, and it's evident that that was not successful. Then they tried to put what they called a colonnade at the North Pacific entrance to the university when it was the normal school, and that was in 1915. They tried to put the entrance to the Old City Cemetery in 1910. And then it wasn't until 1931 that they finally were successful either in approval or to get the money together, and I'm not sure which was the priority, and probably a combination of the two, when they finally were able to put the statue down on Morgan Oak Street. So there were several attempts. They also did put a gateway and a dedication to Colonel William Jeffers that stands at the entryway to the old Jackson City Cemetery in Jackson, Missouri.
I'm Clayton Hester. This has been KRCU's Going Public.